on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
What's left of us? Just a big mistake. There's nothing more.
Today is Friday, January 18th. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm your guest host, Gordon Caddick. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia, to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It is 5:08 p.m., and today's News 101 will be bringing you three debates with candidates from the 2013 UBC Alma Mater Society elections. Our first debate will be among the three candidates for the AMS president, Ekaterina Baranovskaya, Jay Shah, and Carolyn Wong, followed by a debate between the two candidates for VP Finance, Joaquin Acevedo and Mateusz Miadlikowski. And our last debate will be a set of questions for the sole candidate for the position of VP External, Tanner Boker.
But first, we'll start with international news from Free Speech Radio News, followed by our local weekend weather forecast brought to you by the UBC Storm Club. After that, we will bring you a report from Alex Hammer, a news correspondent from Jakarta, reporting on the heavy flooding in Indonesia's capital. And now, let's begin our
And now to FSRN.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. The hostage situation continues today in an Algerian gas field where militants still hold an unconfirmed number of workers. It's also unknown how many people have been killed. The U.S. today confirmed American citizens are still hostages. The Al-Qaeda-linked militants are reportedly offering the U.S. a prisoner swap, demanding the release of two people convicted for terrorism and murder, one Afia Siddiqui and the other the organizer of the New York World Trade Center bombing in 1993. But State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland stated emphatically the U.S. stance today.
The United States does not negotiate with terrorists.
Reuters reports the militants involved in the attack are of several nationalities, including French, Malian, and Egyptian. Fighting is escalating in northern Mali between Islamist militants and government forces backed by French soldiers. Today, there are reports that the government has regained control of two towns recently taken by militants. The first wave of regional troops has also landed in the capital. The International Criminal Court has already announced it will open an investigation into human rights violations allegedly being committed in northern Mali, including extrajudicial killings, rape, and torture. Rupert Colville is UN human rights spokesperson in Geneva.
Rapes of women and girls at times in front of family members and often apparently carried out on an ethnic basis have been repeatedly used in the north to intimidate people and break any form of resistance.
A refugee crisis is also emerging in northern Mali. The UN Refugee Agency says nearly 230,000 people have been displaced since the crisis began a year ago. Many people fleeing Mali say they fear the strict application of Sharia law, according to agency spokesperson Melissa Fleming.
They report having witnessed executions, amputations, and they say that also large amounts of money are being offered to civilians to fight against the Malian army and its supporters. Disturbingly also, we are hearing accounts that there are children among the rebel fighters. They're certainly not there willingly. Also, people very distressed at saying that family members have just disappeared.
In neighboring Senegal, authorities have stepped up security on the western border. During a crackdown Thursday, dozens were arrested for entering from Mali illegally. FSRN's Alpha Diallo is on the Senegal-Mali border and files this report.
Senegalese security forces started operations along the Gabon border with Mali after President Macky Sall announced the country was on a high security alert. Senegal has agreed to provide 500 troops to aid the government of Mali in its fight against the Islamist rebels. Under President Sall, fears militants may try to cross into Senegal, destabilizing the western region. A military police commander on the border said police arrested more than 50 people traveling from Mali to mining sites in Senegal. He said many are Malian nationals, but others were not carrying identification. No refugees have officially crossed into Senegal since the fighting began January 10th, but more than 2,000 people have fled Mali for neighboring countries such as Mauritania and Niger. The UN's refugee agency is working in Burkina Faso to transport displaced Malians away from the border to safety. The agency estimates 700,000 people could be displaced in the conflict. Alpha Diallo, Free Speech Radio News, Senegal.
A military judge issued a new ruling this week in the trial of Bradley Manning, the former Army intelligence analyst, facing life in prison for allegedly giving classified information to WikiLeaks. FSRN's James Helmsworth reports.
Judge Colonel Denise Lynn's ruling bans discussion of Manning's motivations in the upcoming trial. Manning's defense team has argued he acted as a whistleblower with the intent of exposing U.S. war crimes, but now will not be able to present that evidence. Government prosecutors charged Manning with aiding the enemy, among other crimes. Kevin Gastola, a journalist who attended the pretrial motions, summarized their argument.
They apparently found on digital media in Osama bin Laden's compound that he had asked an Al-Qaeda member for a copy of the WikiLeaks documents and returned on a letter was attached the United States embassy cables and war logs that Manning's alleged to have released. So the government wants to suggest that by Manning leaking the information, he made it available to Al-Qaeda, and therefore he could be prosecuted and charged.
Another part of this week's ruling requires government prosecutors to prove Manning knew he was aiding Al-Qaeda when he released the files to WikiLeaks. According to Jesselyn Radak of the Government Accountability Project, this is a small victory for Manning.
The government wants to show that by a sort of backward analysis that, well, stuff from WikiLeaks ended up in bin Laden's cache, but a lot of people would be guilty of a lot of things if that were the standard.
The judge's next ruling on pretrial motions is expected in February. James Helmsworth, FSRN, Washington.
And that's headlines for FSRN from Eugene, Oregon. I'm Jess Burns.
Thank you to Free Speech Radio News for those international headlines. It's now time for our weekend weather forecast with our weatherman, Phil Chang.
Thank you, Claire, and good evening, listeners. Thank you for tuning in. Here on UPC campus, we're seeing some nice weather this afternoon. Since we'll be under the same high-pressure ridge tomorrow and Sunday, we're predicting to have similar cloud conditions on both days. Mostly only high clouds, so we're not expecting any precipitation from high up in the atmosphere. However, Environment Canada has sent out fog warnings in the coming days, so that would be something to look out for, surface level condensation. Light winds blowing on both days with around 5 kilometers per hour, and ground temperatures of around 4 degrees at most times. A rather pleasant weekend coming up. Now for the Environment Canada's official weather forecast. Tonight, a few clouds, fog patches developing near midnight, low of -2. Saturday, mainly sunny, fog patches dissipating in the afternoon, high of +5. Saturday night, clouds, fog patches late in the evening, a low of -1. And Sunday, a mix of sun and cloud, a high of +5. So that's your weekend weather forecast this week, brought to you by the UBC Storm Club and Environment Canada. I'm Phil Chang, reporting for News 101.
Thanks as always, Phil, for that weather report. We now go to a contribution by our international correspondent, Alex Hamer, who's reporting to us from Jakarta on the flooding that have taken place in Indonesia's capital.
Jakarta is officially in a state of emergency, with many areas of Indonesia's capital still underwater. The floods reached their peak mid-Thursday morning, but now water levels are starting to drop slowly. The roads have opened up again, and central Jakarta is slowly going back to normal. So far, 9 people have died in the Greater Jakarta area during the torrential rains that caused the floods and the floods themselves. According to the fire department, these people died from electrocution, building collapse, or illness. Over the weekend, the damage will become clearer. Already today, people have started cleaning up. The army has moved in to start repairing the rail line through central Jakarta, and people are sweeping water and mud out of their homes and shops. The power is out in at least 2 central suburbs. There's been no word from the government authorities about when it will come back on. The victims of these floods will mostly be people living in Jakarta's many slums. With no insurance, low-lying houses, without much protection from the floodwaters, there will be thousands and thousands of Indonesians who have lost everything. Jakarta Governor Joko Widodo says a state of emergency will continue until January 27. It is in these coming days that the waterborne diseases and continued power outages will take their toll in Jakarta. Alex Hamer, Jakarta.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Wednesday mornings on CITR, from 8 to 10 a.m., it's the Suburban Jungle Show with your radio host, DJ Jack Velvet. Thrills, chills, excitement, and music. That's the Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesday mornings from 8 to 10 on 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You can also catch this show, streaming and podcast, at www.jackvelvet.net. Don't miss the Suburban Jungle Show. Wednesdays, 8 to 10, 101.9 FM, CITR.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Claire Eagle. I'm with our guest host, Gordon Caddick, and I'm joined in studio right now by our presidential candidates for the 2013 Alma Mater Society elections, Ekaterina Baranovskaya, Jay Shah, and Carolyn Wong. So we're going to be running this as a little bit of an intro, then with a couple questions that the candidates can answer and maybe rebut some other answers on, and then a conclusion of what basically like a closing statement that they want to deliver to the public. So first of all, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Claire.
Thank you.
So starting with Jay, can you just give us a one-minute intro about yourself or your platform or what you'd like to say?
Sure. My name is Jay Shaw. I'm studying English Literature and International Relations. I currently serve as the Executive Coordinator of Student Services, managing all the services that the AMS provides to students. I manage a $300,000 budget, of which I'm currently 12% under. Speaking about financial issues, I think is definitely important. We need to spend student money prudently. That's why I will address the financial deficit that the AMS is currently facing. I believe that affordability and student aid funding is definitely an important concern, especially in this day and age where students are increasingly suffering from financial difficulties. As well, from a sustainability perspective, I believe that students need a sustainable and effective way of getting to campus. That's why I advocate hard for a rapid rail system to UBC. Finally, I believe that the AMS has endemic communication issues, and that needs to be addressed. I believe that I have a comprehensive plan to move that forward, and I intend on pursuing that should I be elected president.
Awesome. Thanks, Jay. And Caroline, we'll go to you next.
Great. Hi, my name is Caroline Wong. I'm the current AMS VP admin, which means I oversee the $103 million new sub project and also look after over 360 different clubs and constituencies. My platform includes a strong vision for the new sub, addressing our financial structural deficit, fighting to improve student health and well-being on campus, increasing affordability and accessibility to UBC, and I also have a strategy of how to further communicate with students in a more meaningful way. You can check out my more detailed platform on www.votecarolinewong.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Caroline. And Ekat?
Hi, my name is Ekat Tirina-Baranovskaya. I'm the current chair of the University and External Relations Committee. I'm a fourth-year political science and economics student, and I'm very excited to debate with my fellow candidates today. I'm running on a platform focusing on the creation of a vice president student life to replace the vice president administration as we move into the new sub. We currently don't really have a vice presidential role that's focused only on student needs. I am also one of the only candidates who has clear experience lobbying with external organizations, particularly on transit issues and issues of funding. And if you want to find out more, my website's www.ecatforams.ca.
Great. Thanks so much for the introductions, guys. We'll move to the question and answer period. Why don't we just invert the order so we can start with ECAT this time. The first question we have for you today is, what do you feel is the most important thing that the AMS does for students?
That's an interesting question because we do so much. I think that the most important thing the AMS does for students is provide opportunities. So the AMS is a body that lobbies externally, but we give students opportunity to get that experience. We provide services to students, but we provide students with the opportunity to administer those services. We provide them with opportunities to take leadership roles and do so much more that only a student union can do.
Carolyn?
I think the most important thing that AMS does is basically create a direct line to the VP Students Office and Professor Tube. Issues that students don't know how to lobby about or bring up to the university level, they can use the AMS to do so. And we've done so with, say, athletic clubs. In my office, Student Administrative Commission, we took a look at all of our athletic clubs that are non-varsity and not supported through university funding, and they're struggling really hard in terms of accessibility to facilities and academic concessions. So we were able to complete a report and bring that to the VP Students Office.
Jay, what do you feel the most important thing is?
Well, unequivocally, I think the most important thing that the AMS does provide to students are services. And being in a role where I manage all the services on campus from an AMS perspective, I have a first-hand knowledge in terms of the importance of these services, whether it's tutoring, whether it's advocacy against the university, whether it's providing volunteer opportunities or sexual assault support, or even the UPass for that matter. These are essential services that all students require in order for them to not only deal with their day-to-day issues, but also move forward and gain those opportunities and gain the assistance that they otherwise wouldn't have in any other form. So I think it's absolutely essential that services are provided in the best possible way, and I believe that's the most integral function of our student society.
Great. So now each of you will have an additional 30 seconds to either rebut what anyone else has said or to further expand upon your own platform. So once again, we'll start with ECAT.
Okay, so both of the things that my fellow candidates have named are, of course, things that students have created and student run. With the connection with the VP Student Life and President Toop, one of the main things we do, like the All Presidents Dinner, is provide a chance for the students to communicate with them directly. With the services, once again, this is something that we give the students a chance to run, and that's a vital thing that the AMS does.
Can I ask a question? When you said the connection between VP Student Life and, say, the university, was that for the future, one of your future plans, or is it currently because we don't have a VP Student Life right now?
Sorry, I meant VP Student, like the...
Oh, Louise.
Under the, yes.
Okay.
And Caroline, 30 seconds.
Although I do agree that services are important, and I do agree that creating opportunities are important, I think representation is what the AMS does best, and that's the purpose of AMS Council. We represent students, and we want to make sure that we accurately do so in order to bring the important issues to the university, and then further, basically, in conduct our services, our businesses, and how we want to open opportunities for other people. So first and foremost, we are a student society, and we represent student groups.
I think my fellow candidate, ECAP, brings up a very good point in that the AMS is there to provide job opportunities for students. However, I think the specialized nature of some of the services that we offer are only jobs that can necessarily be conducted by permanent staff members in some cases. For example, specialized sexual assault support cannot necessarily be provided by a student, being that the type of specialized skills that you would need to provide that support is not necessarily something that students currently possess. So I think on a broad-based level, it really comes down to the services that we do provide for students.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. So when we were making these questions, we realized that every candidate that we could remember has really made student engagement a priority in their platform, as it should be. But everyone seems to have a lot of ideas about how we can re-inspire students with the AMS, and yet voter turnout remains really low. So how do you think that you'll be different? And this time we'll start with Jay.
Definitely voter turnout and engagement is something that is a high, high priority. And I think definitely one of the major issues that we do have to look at is the means with which we use to actually communicate with students. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I think it's our communication pitfalls that ultimately lead to a lack of engagement. Should we have the interfaces? Should we have built-in feedback mechanisms? Should we have targeted content to be able to provide to students for them to ascertain information? That would be the best possible way to increase engagement. What we have to do is increase the opportunities for students to get involved. And if we're not actually disseminating that information in the most effective manner, that's ultimately going to compound the issue of student engagement. So ultimately, I do believe that it really comes down to a communication issue, while at the same time involving students within that very integral process.
Although I understand that increasing opportunities is a good thing for UBC students, I think if I reflect on my year as a first-year student, I was overwhelmed by the amount of opportunity here at UBC, by the hundreds of different clubs you could join, by the different opportunities you can get involved in. And I think with my platform of creating a CRM platform, customer relationship management platform, that basically makes information more relevant to students, tracking behavior and understanding, are you interested in Greek life? Are you interested in volunteer opportunities? Are you interested in going to the pit at Wednesday nights, for example? That way we understand what opportunities are they actually wanting to engage in, and not mass mailing and just putting out information out there hoping that they'll engage with it. That way I think we can build more positive relationship with our students and then go from there.
And Iket?
Well, I think that we actually have quite a few things in place to communicate with students, but we're just not using them effectively. We've had plenty of chances in the last year where we have done consultations and we've gone out to other constituents and student groups. And the main feedback that I've received is people feel like we go up to them and we talk at them, and not so much ask their opinion on what we're doing. If we make people feel, and if we actually give people an opportunity to provide real feedback, then they'll feel like the work we're doing is partially their work because, well, it is.
Awesome. And now, 30 seconds to rebut or continue to expand, starting with Jay again.
What I will say is that I think Caroline's approach being valuable in nature is really only one of four facets from an external point of view that we need to focus on. I think our strategy has to be holistic. And what is entailed within this holistic strategy is really looking at not only a metrics-based evaluation of how students actually engage with the university and with the AMS, but also whether or not we have the appropriate feedback mechanisms involved, whether or not we actually have targeted content that is actually getting out to them, and whether or not we're using the channels that we currently have that students actually use to gain that information.
The CRM platform that I'm envisioning does provide opportunities for students to provide feedback on the issues that they care about or the businesses or services that they feel most strongly about, as well as different mechanisms for understanding how we want to basically communicate with clubs as a whole. I'm looking at the communications review done by Matt Parson and Sean Craigton this year, and I really want to take that work and move forwards with that. So looking at more holistically how we communicate on the inside, how we communicate with students, constituencies, and non-AMS groups like RHA, UBC RAC, and RAs.
So when we were looking towards the 2013 election, my committee did actually think about CRMs, and one particular. The CRM that the AMS is planning on getting is mainly focused on improving our businesses, but it's inefficient for actually gathering the type of content, Caroline, that you're mentioning, unless we spend at least $40,000 extra to get the most effective model. I'm just curious if you're willing to put in that price.
Yeah, I definitely looked into different companies we could be engaging in this CRM model that I'm looking at. And not do we just want to look at that very expensive type of model, but we could also engage students. We're at one of the best research facilities or institutions in Canada, and I think it'd be a great opportunity for students to engage in this kind of initiative and project to affect their own student society. So awesome. I think there's many more opportunities than just the one.
I'm going to have to stop you guys there on that one. Move on to the next question. So what do you think are the weaknesses of your opponent's platforms? I know we've touched on this a little bit between each of you, but you can delve in a little bit more. And this time, ECAT, we'll start with you because we haven't done that yet.
Scary. Well, I think that while Jay has a very good focus on services, some areas of his platform concern me a little more, particularly at the GSS. You mentioned that with Get On Board, we're working towards a line to UBC and that Surrey is sort of on board with this. That is, first of all, completely not what Get On Board is. It is a model to redo transit funding. And our partners have expressed concern that you're sort of misrepresenting their intentions. Caroline, also at the GSS, you mentioned that you were working on things related to Policy 88 and lobbying the government for issues such as grants. Because both of those things are under my committee, I just wonder what capacity as a VP administration you actually worked on those things with.
Do you have an order? Who do you want to answer first? Or?
I think we're going to go to Jay next, but Caroline, do you keep the question in mind?
I think what I failed to articulate adequately at the time was that there are members of the Surrey Council that are on board. And what I will say is that I think there is a lot of promise in the transit lobbying efforts, but we really have to mobilize the student population, much like how we did with Gage South, in order for us to gain leverage in this particular issue. What I will say on both of fronts with both my fellow candidates is that they do have a emphasis being placed on student life and creating a student life vice president. And I think while it may be important to look at these issues, currently a lot of areas that are being addressed within that supposed creation of a new portfolio is already being adequately addressed by VPs already. And I think it's important to not simply just rename something and have the same processes go on for time and time again.
We're going to have to cut you off there.
Okay, and for my rebuttal, I guess. ECAT, I think you might have misheard me. What I said to GSS Council last night was, as president, I would intend to work with the VP academic on issues that the GSS feel very strongly about, including Policy 88, rights of any inventions or discoveries to be transferred to the university, as well as Acadia Park, among others. I made sure to engage with members of GSS prior to all of this, and I made sure to have really clean and clear lines of communication to my constituencies and clubs as VP admin, and so I knew that these were issues that I brought up, as well as an exec comm from Kirma Hall, the current VP academic. I know these were issues that they really, really cared about. So, yeah.
And so now we'll go to 30 seconds for each of you just to either create more questions or continue in the dialogue that you've already started. So back to ECAT.
I guess I'll mostly reply to Jay. You may not have been as clear as you wish you were during the GSS. However, the concerns I've heard have been particularly about the platform on your website. And it's one thing to make a bit of a miscommunication internally, but when you're talking about bodies external to the AMS, you have additional responsibilities that you have to keep in mind.
Absolutely. I think it's important that we do communicate information appropriately and accurately. And it may have been something that I did write down, but ultimately, at the end of the day, it has been revised. And obviously, it's always a fact-finding mission, and it's important to use a fact-based approach. And what I will say is that I think there is a lot of potential with this idea. And I think provided that we actually approach it in the right way, I think there's a lot of support that can be provided.
I'm a little bit confused as to, are we just rebutting right now?
Okay. If you have something to rebut.
I'm a little bit concerned with ECAT's platform being very advocacy and external lobbying based, as well as Jay's only coming from the services point of view. They are all very qualified candidates, but I believe I am the best candidate just because I have been an exec and I understand the new sub project inside and out. And with this the last year being the last year before the new sub opens in 2014, we need a president who has a strong vision of how we're moving our society and transitioning into this new era.
I want to shift over to housing. AMS surveys show that long commutes cause students to be disconnected from the campus community. Yet living on campus is prohibitively high for many students. One reason, according to the AMS's own documents, is that student rent is 23% higher than it ought to be because of a complicated internal loan scheme where the university pays interest to itself. At the same time, leading university administrators have been awarded interest-free mortgages. In your mind, should we change this arrangement? And if so, how would we go about doing this? Let's maybe start with Carolyn this time.
This internal loan scheme was something very interesting that the VP Academic found and reported on. We definitely want to continue to push the university to revise this scheme and see if we can take the interest that's collected from their loans and use it for housing grants for students who need tiered payments for housing. If you have a room with a view, for example, if you're living in one of the older residences, to give people that kind of opportunity. We know that the Housing Action Plan intends to have 50% of students living on campus, and we want to help them achieve that. And in order to do so, we have to fight on behalf of students.
Jay? I think that's a very important question, Gordon, and that primarily I think there are a lot of avenues that we can pursue to actually advocate for student interests. Particularly, I think one area that we can focus on is creating a housing advisory committee. However, this committee should be comprised of individuals that are outside of campus and community planning. They need to be individuals who are primarily students that are advocating for students. Realistically, the approach that the university has taken has been one that is lacking of any sort of meaningful consultations with the students, and I think having our own advisory committee that we can lobby on behalf of students would be the most effective way of actually achieving our outcomes.
ECAT?
So student housing is another thing that falls under my committee's scope. I was the chair over Gage South, and I've worked extensively with a number of VP academics on housing. One of the biggest things with this internal loan, it's definitely something that we have to push, but you have to be sort of respectful of the methods of communication between us and the university and keep in mind that this is something that Vice President academics are very passionate about, and I want to give them the opportunity to push forward on this. Outside of that, there are a number of new hubs going on, and I think that we have an opportunity to encourage UBC to try different pricing structures for these new hubs. So things like charging more for a room with a view are things that may be easier to do when a building just is starting up.
Awesome. Well, unfortunately, we're not actually going to have time for rebuttals on this one because we are running a bit short on time. But we're going to give you now 30 seconds to just close off with a closing statement of some sort. So this time we're going to start with, whose turn is it to start, Gordon?
Yeah,
we both know it's not my turn to start first. My name is Ekaterina Baranovskaya. I am running to be your AMS president. My platform encompasses all aspects of the AMS. I have a clear vision for our businesses. I have a clear vision for the new sub. I have a clear vision for student life and for advocacy. I believe that next year we will have to move into the new sub. So the main thing this president has to do is ensure that the president that takes over after us and moves the society will be in as best place as they possibly can be.
Jay?
The AMS is in a perilous situation. We are facing endemic financial issues, we are facing considerable sustainability issues, and we are facing a significant communication problem. We can ultimately choose to elect the same sort of individuals who've consistently run for these positions, or we can choose an individual who's actually connected with the student population, who has been there year after year, day after day, serving students and providing them with the necessary services that they need on a day-to-day basis. My name is Jay Sean. I'm running for president. You can check out my full platform at votej.ca. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Caroline Wong, and I'm running to be your AMS president. We're entering a year where our businesses aren't doing too well, increasing construction of the new sub, and we're going to go through some internal reorganization. A president with previous experience as an executive is crucial in pushing our society forwards. I've been involved with different groups on campus, including UBC Orientations, the Greek System, clubs, as well as Res Life, and I know that I can accurately represent students. Please vote for me, Caroline Wong, for AMS President.
Well, thank you to all of you for coming in today. Once again, those were our presidential candidates for 2013 for UBC's All Merit Society, Ekaterina Baranovskaya, Jay Shah, and Caroline Wong. So you can check out all their respective platforms and make sure to get online and vote next week. So we're going to take a quick break, but do stay tuned for the debates between your VP finance candidates. I'm Claire Eagle.
I'm Gordon Caddick. Thanks for joining us.
High five.
All right. Get ready. Here we go again.
This music, reggae music, is tell you, I tell the whole world, you know. Telepathically and physically and mentally and spiritually, we are telling them to this music, yeah.
So you heard it here at Rocker Show 101.9 FM CITR, featuring yours truly, George Beard, keeping the reggae music alive on the west coast of Canada. It's all about roots rock, lovers rock, dancehall, reggae music. On CITR Rocker Show, Sunday noon to 3 p.m. each and every Sunday. For over 25 years of doing it nice, warm, and easy. Until next time, such time, keep the faith and spread it gently. Jah bless and Jah guide and so. Jah out. Bless out.
Don't mind on the rhythm and no wine in a ace. Glad I'm up here in a rubber dump place. Dance out.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that nuisance Spider-Man.
I didn't know you cared.
You!
Yes, Electro, and I'm going to short-circuit you once and for all.
You would have been better off in the hands of the police. You are no match for my power.
It takes more than power to win. It takes brains and knowing your enemy.
I'll pick my power against your brains any day. What was that?
That, my thieving fiend, is the result of brains.
Use your brain. Turn off all the lights when you leave a room. If every household in BC turned off one light bulb for 4 hours a day for 1 year, it would save enough electricity to power all the homes in Mission for an entire year. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
My name is Natasha. I am a robot now. I am playing with my breast again. Nothing to do, nothing to do. Sometimes I listen to Misery Hour with Hans Close Wednesday at 11 before midnight. I don't think I like it.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm your guest host, Gordon Caddick, here with
Claire Eagle.
And we are also in the room with the two VP finance candidates for this AMS election, Joaquim Acevedo and Mateusz Mladiewski.
Close enough. Yeah.
Close enough. So first question, candidates. What is the biggest challenge to the society's finances, and how would you fix it? Maybe let's start with you, Mateusz.
Okay. I believe that the biggest issue currently is a dependency on the businesses, and on top of that, the way they are run. And that's the issue of the income. We have also problems with the spending. We are relying on the outside companies to do the marketing for us and other things. And I believe we should be relying more on the students themselves and provide them with opportunities to be more involved within the society. I believe that will embrace the association with the AMS, and that will provide more income for the businesses as well, because they will be associating themselves with the businesses as well.
Joaquin?
I think that the biggest problem with the AMS's current finances is mostly accountability within the organization, mainly due to a lot of structural deficits just in management and whatnot. And also our businesses. I think that we do rely on them quite a bit, and I think that definitely needs to be decreased. But we also need to take a look at how our businesses are doing and find ways to really improve our business revenues and be able to put out products that are actually by the people who come here to the sub and use those.
We have time for rebuttals now. Mateusz?
I also believe that the structure of the student fees as well is a problem, because the budget is very, very restricted. We cannot spend fees in the areas that we need to spend them. on, and that creates the restricted budget within the AMS, and that enables the executives to decide on which area to spend more money on and which should spend less.
Something to add to that?
Yeah, I think that some of the restrictions that we do have on some of the fees are actually good because it allows us to really spend the money where it needs to be spent. If the services fees weren't allocated directly to the services, we might overnight just lose services from one year to the next because executives decide to take them out. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good thing. I do think, however, that at the end of the year, there's a lot of fees that are just being accumulated over the years, and we need to find some way to be able to tap into those and actually utilize them. So finding a way to modify our policies and making sure that students agree with these so that we can perhaps put into an endowment fund that will allow us to have future projects.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. So next question. Would you knowingly undertake a project that you knew would lose money? Let's start with Joaquin.
I think that's an interesting question. If you absolutely knew 100% that you're going to lose money on something, it's definitely not a good way to do it. I highly believe in responsible spending. If it is a business venture and you know 100% sure that you're going to lose money, then definitely not. If it's something more like a service that students need and they want, I would have to consider what it is and be sure that what we are actually spending will have the impact that we hope it to have, and so that students can feel the value of that money that's being spent.
I must say that if business is it's predicted to lose money, I don't think it should be considered as a business and shouldn't be put in place. If services, yes, of course, we are losing money, but it's not losing money itself. It's spending them wisely, such as SafeWalk and other services that are actually helping students to feel better in society. Thus, business itself should not lose money, should break even, or should not exist, in my opinion. The same with Block Party, we consider it as a business, because it is a business, and we should break even minimum. That should be the minimum plan.
So now 30 seconds to rebut.
Speaking about Block Party and even the AMS Welcome Back Barbecue, that's not really run as a business. I mean, there's a difference between the ways that monies are spent there. Part of it is the entertainment and the sort of things that actually happen during the day. And a lot of times for that, we're actually losing money. The reason why there is a lot of times like a profit that a lot of people see is because of regulations that actually come with the SOLs and alcohol spending that we have to donate to charity any profits that we make directly from alcohol and can't be reallocated to our main expenses.
And exactly, since it cannot be reallocated, that means that we are making some money because that's the profit that's going to be reallocated to some charities and other organizations. Thus, we are breaking even, right? And that's a plan, and that's a minimum plan that we should do. Okay, thank you.
The AMS is undergoing some major restructuring now. There's a new business and administration governance board. How do you feel that it will change the relationship between the AMS Council and its businesses? And how would you interpret your role as a non-voting member of that board? What would your priorities be?
I think the board for businesses is a great idea to oversee the businesses themselves. But the legal obligations for the VP finance lays in to oversee the entire budget. Thus, any mistakes or any miscommunication is going to be the VP finance is responsible for everything that the business that the board for businesses does. Thus, I believe the communication is one of the most important parts of it because we have three layers. We have the businesses themselves, then we have the board, and then we have the executives. Thus, I believe the communication between the board, the businesses, and the executives should be very firm and should be embraced. So the executives know on what page we are.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you were asking more about the relationship with council and the business governance board. I think that the relationship there is going to be hopefully very productive. We do have a lot of alumni who are going to be bringing lots of experience from the fields, who are eventually going to be handpicking to be able to guide us through our business plans and whatnot. And I don't think the relationship there is going to be too strenuous. It'll actually take a little bit of the pressure of council to be able to make those hard-to-make decisions, especially when it comes to business planning, which a lot of students don't actually have a lot of experience. And as far as what my role would be there is exactly what it's supposed to be. Provide the business with all of the information they need in order to make a business plan that is successful. And I don't think that lacking the voting power there is going to be detrimental. Rather, I think that influence is way more important than any sort of voting capabilities within the board.
We have time for rebuttals now. Mateus, just think.
And that's a great point, because since I've been an employee of AMS for the past year and a half and I had my own business, I do have knowledge and skills to improve the businesses. I was able to pinpoint the areas in need for improvement, and I believe it would be great interactions between me and the board. I could help them out and tell them what exactly is wrong with our business, not any other business, but our particular AMS business, which I've worked in for the past year and a half.
Sir Mateus, going back to your point there, I think in the past, two debates that we've had, you've mentioned that we do have problems in the businesses, but you've never really talked about any very specific problems that we need to address immediately, especially coming from the board. I think some of the things I've said is definitely merchandising, and things that I've proposed is looking and doing a very full review of our businesses to be able to create a very focused strategic plan to be able to improve those, especially with the guidance from the board.
Can we get a response?
And that's a great point. I agree, but you know, you're not providing any particular points either. I can give you one simple example. For example, cash out sheets. We are still using paper, which is wasting, first of all, resources, money on paper. We're paying salaries for people to go through their paychecks, and that reduces accountability. Many people do not know how to fill their cash out sheets. One simple idea, electronic cash outs. That's it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Joaquin will give you an extra 30 seconds on this one as well.
So I do agree that simple things like that is really, really important. However, I think that the role of the executive within the society is not to go in and change one little thing every year. It's rather create a vision for the society so they can create proper policy so the people who are implementing it can go back and say, these are the different things that we need to do, and really has that future planning for the youth society so it has the sustainability in all aspects of the word.
Awesome. So for this next question, we're just going to do a simple response, no rebuttal, since we use our rebuttal time on this one. But this is something that I'm pretty passionate about. So I know that in the fall, the AMS commissioned a consulting report about the feasibility of the Whistler Lodge operations. It was pretty dire, not too positive. So what do each of you think we should do with the lodge? And this time, starting with Joaquin.
Yeah, so with the lodge, I actually think that the lodge should stick around. A recent survey that was just done by the council actually showed that a significant amount of students on campus believe that the Whistler Lodge should under no circumstances get sold or gone rid of. And I actually think that with the Whistler Lodge, with a little bit of investment, we can actually upgrade it so that students who are going there feel comfortable and feel like it's worth their time and their money. And you know, the problem with the Whistler Lodge is not really people not using it necessarily, but it's rather third-party bookings who bringing a lot of the cash that is needed to be able to keep the Whistler Lodge open so that students can continue to use it as a service.
Yes, I just had a chat with the Ski and Snowboard Club at UBC a couple of days ago, and they provided really good ideas on how to improve the Whistler Lodge itself. They just feel that there was lack of communication between executives and the club itself. Thus, I think there's little ideas that can really transform the Whistler Lodge into a successful business. I do not believe we should sell it. We should give the power of deciding about the Whistler Lodge to the students. After all, the AMS is run by students and for students, and thus I believe that every single property that the organization has is owned by the students, and they should have a vote on it.
Final question now. Let's start with Mateus on this one. In your mind, what does the AMS spend too much money on, and what does the AMS spend too little money on?
I like talking to people, and I spend a lot of time talking to people, and they believe that art tutoring, for example, was one of the problems. There was the quality of it and just the availability of it. I believe we spend too much money relying on the outside contractors, as I said before. We spend way too much money on marketing with companies providing some really just basically $100,000 to spend on the marketing company, to be honest, I didn't see much of it. I live on campus, I work on campus, didn't see much. So I believe that we should involve more students and spend more money within the society and rely less on the outside contractors. Okay, thank you.
Joaquin?
I definitely have to agree with that one. There's a lot of useless spending that happens, and it's not just with the businesses. It's actually throughout the place, whether it's with services, and whether it's with the executive, whether it's with administration. There's many different positions that are currently in place that are not being really used to full potential, and I think that some restructuring of our internal systems actually needs to happen in order to maximize our efficiencies, to be able to get better communication within the society and better communication and transparency with their students abroad, so they can actually understand what their fees are being used for and be able to have a say and understand way better.
Awesome. So we're not going to have time for rebuttal, but we're just going to give you 30 seconds to just do a closing statement and really encapsulate your policy or what you're standing for. This time starting with Teush, I believe. Is that, yes. Guys, correct me if I'm wrong. Is that?
That really matters.
Okay.
I'm Mateusz Miadlikowski, running for VP Finance. My experience with businesses, with AMS businesses and outside other businesses as well, provides me with the knowledge necessary to improve the businesses itself. And my platform would be to change those businesses, transform them into better businesses, avoid unnecessary spendings, and promote wise spending, and encourage students to get more involved with the society itself.
Awesome. Joaquin?
Hi, everyone listening. I am Joaquin Acevedo, and I want to serve you as your next VP Finance. I have a lot of experience serving as the Science Center Graduate Director of Finance, as well as in the Residence Hall Association's as National Communications Coordinator. I want to ensure that the AMS is being responsible and held accountable for all of its spending, zero budgeting, as well as creating a transparent communication for our students with our fees and spending, and finally be able to provide future planning for the organization in terms of our businesses, as well as our strategic plan for sustainability and transition to new sub.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So once again, those were your two VP Finance candidates for the AMS elections in 2013, Joaquin Acevedo and Mateusz Miadlikowski. So for more information, make sure to check out their platforms and make sure to vote next week as well. So we're going to take a quick break, but do stay tuned for a quick interview with your VP external candidate.
Miss Natasha Raya, I'm a robot now. I'm playing with my breast again. Nothing to do. Sometimes I listen to Misery Hour with Hans Close Wednesday at 11 before midnight. I don't think I like it.
Now repeat after me. Bugger off. Bugger off. Sod. Sod. Bloody. Bloody. Now put them all together. Bugger off, you bloody sod.
Bugger off, you bloody sod.
Okay, you're in.
Let's smash things up!
Every Saturday, from noon to 1 p.m., listen to Generation Annihilation on CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio in Vancouver.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. We have a quick interview now with Tanner Boker, the candidate for the AMS VP External, and then we'll be going to CITR Sports for coverage of the basketball game. So, Tanner, first question for you. TransLink's current level of service and crowding issues have shown that there are problems with the organization's current funding model. What do you think the VP External's role is in relation to this issue? Do you think it's to help TransLink create a more efficient plan or to keep costs low for the students?
It's actually really interesting because I just got out of a meeting a few minutes ago with Ian Jarvis, the CEO of TransLink, and about 20 other stakeholders from around the region who were just talking about the very same issue. The role of VP External thus far has been to advocate for UBC students on service levels. This is the first year that we've really looked into the funding model as the fundamental issue. And what we've done is created a campaign called Get On Board BC. It was something that I was tasked with as associate VP this year and have been the campaign director for the past 9 months. And that campaign looks at the funding issue as the ultimate cause of our service cuts, a lack of having rapid transit on the Broadway corridor in Surrey and around the region. And we're using that campaign, which is also a broad coalition of other stakeholders, to push for that general issue. And as VPX, I will plan to continue to work with that group and push the issue forward.
Awesome. Thanks.
Tanner, with the looming provincial election, will the changing political landscape affect the way in which you advance student interests? And how do you intend to connect students with these provincial issues?
I would say regardless of which party is in power, we still have an obligation to represent student issues, and we have to do that effectively and more clearly than we have in the past. The VP External's office in the past has been more of a policy department. We've kind of just done backdoor lobbying and the occasional coalition campaign with other student unions. But this year we need to be more active. We need to really say these are the issues that students care about. We will not be taken advantage of, and ensure that when a new party is potentially in power, or if the current one still stays in power, that we're holding their feet to the fire to continue to push these issues forward. And it's going to be the role of the VP External to really coordinate this campus around some social action, but responsible social action balanced with lobbying as well.
As VPX, what are your lobbying priorities?
Right. Well, I'd say the first one is transit. My background is primarily there. I do intend to push for a rapid transit line to UBC and to look to solve the funding issue. The second is on reform of BC's financial aid system. We have a very broken bursary system, and students are really struggling to be able to afford basic necessities here at university. So we need to be looking at an actual cost of an education with housing costs included, as well as books, food. And pretty much those are my two major ones. There's also obviously issues on childcare that we need to work with graduate students to address. But those two enough are going to leave quite a lot to be done over the next few months.
Awesome. And just to end it off, can you just encapsulate your platform for us in 30 seconds?
Sure. So my platform is on four basic points. I think I've hit the transit one fairly effectively. The second is on the provincial elections. I do intend to create a coalition campaign that we can run with other student unions and other stakeholders throughout the region and the province to push on issues that affect students. I also intend to reform the VP External's office to be a little bit more open and inclusive to students, bring them into how we develop our campaigns, how we do action. And then I also plan to address our engagement issue through new consultations with other groups, bringing in underrepresented groups and giving them a voice in the external office, and also kind of moving away from an interest-based office to something where we can take a little bit more action and communicate more with the campus population.
Just from my personal interest, what do you see as one of those underrepresented groups that you want to bring in?
Well, actually, we just had a consultation with a group of Aboriginal students, and they were very very eager to work with us in constructive manners. And I'm really interested in finding ways to give them a voice, as well as our undergraduate societies on academic issues. They can work with us. And also those with disabilities, international students. There's so many different demographics on this campus that we have never really engaged in earnest that I think we can bring into the process and find really constructive and effective ways to channel their enthusiasm and use our resources to push for some change.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time, Tanner, and thanks for chatting with us today. Best of luck with your campaign.
Thanks very much.
Okay. So that is our show for today, which is Friday, January 18th. My name is Claire Eagle, and today you heard the interviews with our candidates for the AMS elections 2013. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts, our usual team, along with our guest host, Gordon Caddick. So if you'd like to share your comments, get involved, or give us an important news tip, contact us through our email, news@citr.ca. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/news. For more independent news, join us on Monday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101 and debates between your VP academic and VP admin candidates. I'm Claire Eagle.
I'm Gordon Caddick.
And today's show was also produced by us because we are multi-talented. From the entire news team here at CITR, thank you for listening and stay tuned for coverage of the basketball game here at UBC.